It's really important to have those relationships with the broker and your team, mortgage broker, so that he can give you updates basically every week, because right now it's changing a lot quickly. And if you make an offer and then rates go up 50 basis points, it's going to really affect your purchase price and your returns.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another Multifamily Money episode. I'm your host, Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another show. Today, we've got an exciting guest, but before I get into that, as always, there's only one fee on the show. I make no money from the show, but the fee to get this in front of more people is if you got value out of the show, please share it with someone who you think could also get value. Could be a friend, could be a family member, who knows, maybe just someone you randomly bump on the street and start talking real estate and personal finance. Please share it with them. And if you haven't done so, please leave a rating and review. As I mentioned in previous episodes, I did have that goal to get to 100 and by the end of June, and we made it to over 100 by beginning of May. But something weird happened with Apple and they were removing ratings and reviews. So we lost over 20 ratings and reviews, but we're starting to claw back. We're back up to 83. So if you haven't done so, greatly appreciate it if you would. If you get value out of the show, if you could just leave a rating or review, it would be amazing. All right. The show today, we got a special guest. And I know I've been talking about this one for a while, and we finally got to get things aligned and get him on. But this is none other than my partner in Greenbrier Capital Group, Tucker Rainey. Tucker, we'll get into his story. Tucker, we grew up together. And, you know, as I think happens with a lot of people that grow up together, you kind of go your separate ways. You go off to college or pursue some type of career, move to a different city. I was in Boston. He was in Chicago. We kind of went our separate ways, still kept in contact, obviously, and would see one another every now and then. But as life happens, it happens. And yeah, you kind of drift, but reconnected through real estate, which is another amazing thing of real estate. It creates those bonds through the passion of real estate investing. And that's what happened to us. And I don't know if I mentioned on this show, but I definitely mentioned in other interviews that we connected by doing a deal together, a small deal. And that eventually led into a partnership at Greenbrier, where he's our director of acquisitions. He handles everything, you know, finding the deal, underwriting the deal, broker relations, all that good stuff. And so today, what we're talking about is kind of our process at Greenbrier of how we're finding deals and how we underwrite them. So we go through kind of A to Z, our process of underwriting and how that's changed, especially over the last 6 months, but how it's changed over the last several years and kind of what we're doing to weather this crazy market right now. So I asked him some technical questions. I asked him some more general, broad arching questions of the market and kind of where we see it going. At the end of the day, we're not economists. We don't have a crystal ball. So just like underwriting in general, it's all about making educated guesses, and you make those educated guesses on by pulling in a lot of data from experience and research, and also leveraging other people who have knowledge, whether that be a lender, insurance broker, property manager. All these individuals, all these teams have decades of experience and they're niche, right? So you've got to put the ego aside and don't think that your underwriting has to solely be you. Better underwriter is the one that takes data points in from all different sources. For instance, we talk about what salary should be, what certain expenses, repair and maintenance at the property should be. Well, you should probably go to a property manager in that market. If you're not currently operating in that market, if you are, you obviously have the data to pull from. But if you're not, you should be talking to a property manager that's local to that market, because they see it every day what those things are going to cost. And that's just an example of what we get into. But I'm really excited about this one. Obviously, Tucker's my partner and good dear friend, smart guy, engineer by trade, can do things with Excel that I didn't even think were possible. So a really great asset to have. And we get into some good conversation. I think you're really going to enjoy this. If you have any questions, always just reach out to me. You can find me on Instagram. Recently changed my Instagram handle. It's Sean Wins, REI. So you can find me there on Instagram, or you can find me on LinkedIn. Just search Sean Winslow. But if you have any questions or just want to connect, I love talking with you all. I love talking real estate. So please do so if you haven't already. All right. But without further ado, here is my partner, Tucker Rainey. What's going on, everyone? As I mentioned earlier, I've got a really special guest today. The one and only my partner, Tucker Rainey. What's going on, Tucker?
How you doing, Sean? I'm doing good.
Great. Thanks again for taking time out of your schedule. Not that you can get too far away from me.
We only talk like 24 times a day. So glad we could sit down.
Yeah, Tucker ran. I don't know. I think his phone just shows him his talk time on his phone. And I was by far the highest out of anyone, even his wife. So
yeah, don't tell her that. But yeah, by minutes talked, you're the winner.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner. But anyways, as I mentioned in the intro, everyone, Tucker's my partner in Greenbrier Capital Group, and his main focus is acquisitions from underwriting, broker relations, everything about finding and taking down the deal. But today we're going to specifically talk about underwriting. Tucker's kind of a Excel wizard. He'll get into his background, why that's the case. But we want to talk about what his process looks like, what he looks for, where to find certain stuff that can really make a big difference in your underwriting, and then kind of what he's doing in this ever-changing climate we're in right now to make this, I feel like the term conservative is really overused, but make our best educated guess, right? Because it's not that you're being conservative, it's just that you're taking all the information and then you're making the best educated guess on what you think is going to happen. But we'll get into that. So without further ado, Tucker, if you wouldn't mind just sharing a little about your background, who you are, where you're from, and how you got into real estate.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so I'm from New England, central Vermont is where I came up, and then got my civil engineering degree, from University of Massachusetts Amherst. After that, decided to move across the country to Chicago, and that's where I was for almost a decade, about 9 years working as a bridge engineer. And then at some point in that process, I started thinking about how I could generate income outside of my W-2. And during COVID, I had all this time on my hands. So I kind of self-educated myself on real estate. And that's when you and I started talking more and figured out that we have common interests in real estate. And ever since then, so the last, 2-3 years, I've been underwriting probably hundreds of deals, maybe 1,000. I don't know.
I think it's close to 1,000 for sure. Because as you'll probably get into, there's multiple levels of underwriting, from like quick analysis of a deal to like hours of underwriting into one deal. So it's all different levels, but definitely I would say over 1,000, like combining all those. But if I do remember correctly, you got into real estate even before like the pandemic, before we started talking. Yeah. I believe back in like, I don't know if you said 2016 or 15, you took some course.
Yeah, at some point, I think when I was single and I had more time, I took a Udemy course on financial modeling. I guess because I have nothing better to do with my time than like stick my nose in Microsoft Excel for more hours than my day job already makes me do. So yeah, you're right. I did start before the pandemic, technically.
Yeah, I think that's like what got us talking. As everyone knows, at the beginning of the pandemic, everyone thought the sky was falling and you couldn't really go anywhere or do anything. So I'm sure like we did, a lot of people probably reached out to friends and family they hadn't like talked to in a while. It's not that we hadn't talked in a while, but like I really, really caught up. Yeah. Everyone's lives has slowed down, so you could do that. And so we started talking and real estate came up and he brought that up that he took the course and I brought up what I was starting. And then, yeah, it went from there. And I definitely told this story on other podcasts before that I've been interviewed, but it was him and I decided to do just like a deal together. So we took down a smaller deal as a triplex and we just worked really well together, at least from, don't want to put any words in Tucker's mouth, but from my point of view, we worked really well together and he filled in my weaknesses and I think I filled in his weaknesses. We just really meshed well and made each other better. And not that it was intended to be this, but it was kind of like a courtship in the sense of like we did an individual deal together that if it didn't work out, we could just go our own ways, but it worked out really well. And then we decided to partner in Greenbrier and take down bigger things. But besides that, let's get into the whole underwriting thing.
Sure.
What that looks for you. Like we get a lot of emails on deals, not as much right now because we're in a different landscape. And I will tell the listeners this, if you're experiencing the same thing, where on the larger multi-side, if you're seeing a lot less deals come to market, don't worry, you're not the only one. I've talked to a lot of brokers and they've all same consensus that we probably won't see that deal flow really pick up until our end of Q3, beginning of Q4. So just wait, but take it back a few months where we were getting a lot of deals into our email every single day. Like, what does that process look like for you? Like, how are you eliminating some that you're not going to even look at? Or how do you pick up on ones that like, I need to take a deeper dive into it?
Yeah, sure. So most of it is about having a clearly defined buy box and what exactly you're looking for. Because you can get distracted by the next shiny object and try to go after a property that isn't really in your wheelhouse. So what I did initially, before you do anything, is to make that definition. We're going after value add, B and C class properties, in growing markets. So once I know that, then I can eliminate probably 80% of my inbox of listings by brokers just by reading the subject line. I don't even have to open the email. I can just see, oh, class A in DFW. Okay, I can get rid of that. That's the first thing, just checking the big details. And if it's too big or too small, then I can just delete them and move on. But then if I find one that looks like it might work, say 200 units, it's been untouched, so they're all classic units. That's when I actually open the email, download the documents, and start seeing if there's opportunity to add value. And also, I guess, to take one step back, before I do that, I need to be sure that it's in the market that we like. So I've spent a couple of years looking at markets, so I have a pretty good sense of what's good and what's not so good. So that's a little faster for me. But if a property comes up that I don't know the town, then I'll dive into the town for a few hours and then decide if it's worth it or not to download the documents and go from there.
Yeah. And what did you look for in the town? Like, obviously people know like population and all that stuff, but kind of besides that, I guess, what are you looking for?
Yeah. So like you mentioned, I want to see population growth. I want to see like a friendly business environment. So there'll be economic growth and more jobs coming to the area. That kind of information, I usually just Google the town and then start reading about it, see what's going on. What's the big news in town? Like, for example, Wilmington, North Carolina, they're expanding their port. So the expansion is going to bring more jobs to the area. Then also crime is, of course, important. But that crime is a tough one to really get a sense of from your desk here. The best way to do that is to go there and get boots on the ground and look at the neighborhood and look at the surrounding blocks, because it can change quickly. And it might look like a bad area from what you can tell on the internet. But once you get there and really take a look, maybe it's an opportunity.
Yeah. And definitely vice versa too. It could look good. And then you get there and like, yeah, trust me, you feel it. Totally. It's like, this is sketchy. Another thing about Google too, is Google the property name. We do that. And like,
yeah, read reviews.
Read reviews for sure. And then sometimes if there's shootings at the property, it'll come up in the news. So it's really important to do that, especially if it's an area where we're uncertain.
Yeah.
And if they're shooting, like, yeah, stay away from that property for sure. So once you define that market, before I get into that, I want to bring up, we'll do a little like what's known as like back of the napkin or back of the envelope analysis. So there's a couple things we look at. There's one we use where you take the gross rents and then you take depending on how conservative you are, 50 to 55% expense ratio, mm-hmm, and then apply the market cap. You get the market cap rate, the capitalization rate, from a lot of sources, speaking to brokers, speaking to other investors in the area, and then CoStar is the big one. But as Tucker always tells me, got to be careful with CoStar because it usually lags a quarter or so. And especially in an ever-changing environment like we are today, that could make a big difference. But anyways, get like a sense of that cap rate and then apply it to that NOI. And that'll give you an estimate of where you can be from an acquisition price standpoint. And when you talk to the broker and they tell you like, this is pricing guidance, you know how far you're off or not. And then another one we use, this sounds really simple and it is, but it's the 1% rule. You take the price per unit and then you see if it's 1% of that is what you can get in average monthly rent for the units. And that's like what you could get, not necessarily what the property's getting right now. So those are some things we look at, see if we want to move forward. And then Tucker, once we do that, like what's the first steps you're taking to start to underwrite?
Yeah, sure. So the first steps that I do are take a look at the rent roll, see where occupancy is and make sure it aligns with the OM that the broker provided. I'll download the T12 and start plugging that into my underwriting spreadsheet and take a look at the taxes, get an insurance quote. So I guess the three main things when I start underwriting is pricing guidance, like you mentioned, a tax analysis, or just see if what's happening with the taxes. If it hasn't traded in a long time, you're going to see a big spike in the taxes. And also an insurance quote. Insurance quotes have been going up like crazy the last 18 months or so. So I'm seeing big spikes or big differences between the T12 and what we're being quoted. So once I get those three things, then I can go through and fill in the remaining items in the T12.
Yeah.
And then the next step after kind of getting the base set with those items is looking at rent comps and seeing how much room there actually is. And if we're going to be able to add the value that we need to add to provide our investors with a great return.
Right. Yeah. Because the brokers and the OM will always suggest you can get this bump in rent, right? But everyone's got to realize what the broker's there for is to sell the property. So they're going to paint it in the best light. There's always going to be a little embellishment. So yeah, you got to check these. And we check multiple sources. We check, obviously, CoStar, Rent-A-Meter, and then just simply Googling other apartments in the area, like just simply apartments.com, and see what they're listing their properties at. And then on the tax part that Tucker mentioned, like, I'm sure you just do analysis, like preliminary, just to check. But once you realize this could be a deal, you do a little more digging. And I know you have investing in different markets. You really need to understand the tax law and how it works, because some reset the following year after it's purchased. Yep. And then there's a ratio you use per purchase price. And then some states, it's like every 4 years. So if you don't mind, just get into that.
Yeah. So what I usually do is just type in the whatever town we're looking at or city, and then assessor database. And that'll bring me to the county website. And from there, usually within a few clicks, I can either find a phone number to call and talk to someone and to give me an answer. Or a lot of the websites are pretty good now where they actually tell you exactly how to calculate the tax burden based on the market value or assessed value of the property. We look at a lot of deals in Georgia, so I don't have to do that every time because I already know that what the assessment ratio is, 40% in Georgia. So I can use that, and then with an assumed purchase price, determine an approximate future assessed value and a future tax burden, so we can figure out what that increase will be after we take ownership.
Yeah. And the important thing with all this, to build a team before you go into any market, and it's not necessarily every team member needs to be new per market. Like, you can use the same lender, insurance broker. But like when Tucker was mentioning, like reaching out for quotes, it's important to have those team members in place.
Yeah.
So you can just fire it off quickly. And then a lot of times, like especially on the lender side, they'll, even the insurance side, they'll just give you an estimate based on what they've been seeing in the market. So it's not going to be finite, but they're not going to really start digging in until you have at least have like an LOI signed. So but it's important to at least take that step so you can be pretty sure this could work. All right. So you've got the rent roll. You've looked at the rent comps. You've started to plug in some of the numbers. What are you seeing? Because we're seeing inflation, right? And so with a 100 plus unit property, you have salaries at the property, right? You're employing people like a leasing agent, a property manager, maintenance, and then just regular utilities and all the expenses that a property will incur. What are you taking in right now in terms of to combat inflation?
Yeah. So just with the volatility in the market, kind of the unknown status of rates right now, if they're going to go much higher or level off at some point, we'll see. And in combination with inflation, we kind of have to hedge ourselves in multiple ways. So for inflation specifically, I'll grow all expenses by a certain percentage in the first, say, 2 years, and then kind of level it off after that. And I'll also, just for our month one assumptions, have numbers that are typically higher than what the current owner is spending. We're accounting for an increase in expenses immediately, and then also over the next, say, 24 months. But for interest rates, we really need to protect ourselves on the exit cap rate. So for that, there's different theories about how interest rates affect cap rates. But right now, I'm being really careful about those assumptions and taking a deeper dive into the CoStar comparable sales and making sure that they are actual comps, and adding, say, 100 basis points to those cap rates to make sure that we're as protected as we can be in the future when we do to go to exit.
Yeah.
And I'll look at different exit scenarios. So 3 year, 5 year, 7, 10 year, just selling the property, but also refinancing into another agency debt, for example, and what all those different scenarios will look like based on a higher cap rate.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got to realize, everyone, like, cap rates, like you said, there is different thoughts and philosophies on how interest rates affect cap rates, because they definitely haven't decompressed at the rate interest rates have climbed. Like, some people think they're correlated like they would, but they haven't. Sometimes there is a lagging factor, but also you got to take into account your market. Some markets will decompress more than others, right? And in terms of interest rates, you brought that up, Tucker. Another big aspect of underwriting, especially in today's market, is what you can get for debt. So one, what are you seeing that you can get for debt on the type of properties you look at? And two, what are you doing to kind of protect us in the future in terms of how you're underwriting that?
Yeah, so we're trying to stay away from bridge lending right now, just in market. And we're looking at long-term debt, so CMBS or agency debt, depending on the deal that we're looking at. We need to see a debt coverage ratio over like 1.25. Yeah, so we're seeing 5.5%, sometimes 6%. It's kind of hard to say right now with the announcement, I think coming in 2 days from now, 48 hours, the Fed's going to raise rates or We all think he's going to. We'll see what happens. But so maybe by Friday, rates will be 50 basis points higher. I don't know. It's really important to have those relationships, like you mentioned, with the broker and your team, mortgage broker, so that he can give you updates basically every week, because right now it's changing a lot quickly. And if you make an offer and then rates go up 50 basis points, it's going to really affect your purchase price and your returns. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like you said, we want to see a DCR of 1.25, essentially meaning that the property's income can pay for 100% plus another 25%. Yeah. So it can cover that over the expenses, including the debt, right? And we also look for debt yield. I don't know if you want to explain what that is, but the lenders also want to see, like, I haven't checked recently, but it might even be higher, but 7 to 8%, and it might even be higher than that.
7%. That is something that bridge lenders will use more often than agency really wants to see, that 25% coverage on the debt.
Yeah.
But say a year ago or 18 months ago, when there were a lot more operators using bridge loans, then the 6 to 7% debt yield was a critical value to hit in the year one.
Right. Yeah. So not to confuse anyone, DCR is simply how much you can cover over your debt service. So your annual debt service, that it's different than debt yield. But you want to make sure you have a DCR of 1.25 or higher, and debt yield, if you're using bridge, which we don't recommend at this point, we're staying away from it, but 7 to 8%. But then, Tucker, like, another thing we look at is, what if we use agency and then we want to add a supplemental? And listeners, what a supplemental is, it's simply like a second mortgage, right? You're adding to the current mortgage, but the rate you're going to get, so you'll keep the same rate you originally had on the first loan, but then the supplemental.
Yeah, and a majority of the debt will be at that original. Yep.
So then the supplemental, the second loan, will be at a new rate. So how are you underwriting for that new rate and how much you can actually take out?
Yeah, so for supplementals, our guidance that we've given from Bricadia, our mortgage broker, is 150 basis points higher than the current day at the time that you get the supplemental. 150 basis points higher than the market. So say you're at 4%. Well, say your original loan is at 4%, then a supplemental a couple of years from now, if rates go up to 4.5%, that supplemental is going to be 6%. So
it's like 200 basis points above your current rate.
Yes, because you above had 50, today values.
Yeah, you had 50 basis point increase in market and then another 150 because the supplemental, that's what they charge. Yep.
Exactly. You still need to satisfy the debt coverage ratio with that additional chunk of debt at a higher interest rate. So we need to look at the blended coverage ratio with the two different interest rates and two different size mortgages all over the NOI and reserves.
Yeah. So it can limit, depending on where you've been able to push the NOI, where rates are, it could really limit to you on what you can actually, because the supplemental is just like a cash out refi, but with an agency, right? It's to get money off the table. So it could really limit you on how much you can take out. So you don't want to be overly optimistic on this because it could really change your return profile if you get out as much as you originally thought.
Yeah, and right now we're assuming 75% loan to value at the most.
Yeah, but a lot of them is like 60 or 65 that we're looking at,
yeah,
right?
So totally.
That's just where we're at right now, because it always seems to be where the debt market is pricing. The property is always ahead of where the seller is pricing, right? So the seller's always lagging them because obviously they want to get as much as they can. And they're still thinking like, dang, I could have gotten like 10% more like 3-4 months ago.
Yep.
So there is a little lagging factor to that. So that's also why we're seeing a 60% LTV. That's not the only reason, but that's a major reason. Another reason is just, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty in the world. So the lender wants to take risk off the table.
And we're seeing some deals drop out of contract because rates are so volatile right now.
Yeah. There's a lot of retrading, which simply means people going back and repricing it because rates are higher now from than when they originally went under contract.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the reasons why we're not seeing as many deals come to the market, because sellers just want the dust to settle so they don't have to deal with retrading.
Mm-hmm.
It's also summer, notoriously slow in the real estate market too. So everyone's on vacation.
Yep.
But I think it'll start to pick up. One, once we get this next rate hike, and then two, I think this Friday they had the GDP is announced. Yeah. So if we are officially in a recession, which personally I feel we will be, then that could also have a say in what they do with rates.
Yeah.
So we'll see. All right, Tucker. So you've input the rent roll, you've made your assumptions on expenses, you've got your debt quote.
Mm-hmm.
What else are you looking for to kind of like tighten things up?
So once we have the property as a whole analyzed, then we'll look at what we can provide to our investors. So we'll look at doing a preferred return and then maybe an exit split or an exit waterfall when we sell, or doing a supplemental, like you mentioned, maybe just doing a straight split, like 70-30 on the cash flow, and then into a waterfall at the exit, all different combinations like that. We usually start with a preferred return so our investors can make as much money as quickly as possible.
Yep, IRR.
Exactly.
Yeah, listener, you might ask, why do you have so many different like return strategies and profiles or structures to get there? And the reason for that is kind of twofold. One, a lot of investors are IRR driven and equity multiple driven. They want to know how close can they get to doubling their money, if not doubling their money, and how fast that can happen.
Yep.
And so you can structure deals from a return profile differently so you can meet that IRR and that equity multiple hurdle. And so that's why you have those tools to play with. And then two, it also depends on your equity source. Different equity sources are going to want different return profiles. Like some are just going to want a pref with a split on the back end. Some are going to want a pref with a hurdle. Some are going to just want like 80 to 90% of the deal.
Yeah. And I'll set it up with three different tranches. So say we have one equity source that can bring a large chunk and we'll provide them potentially a higher return. So I'll divide that into one tranche. Then I'll do another tranche for the other portion and then see what the kind of the sum of the two results in.
Yep. So it's really great to have a model that can do that. And obviously that's one of Tucker's strengths that he brings to the table, is that he can easily like change the model to what,
yeah,
to, you know, what it needs to be. I remember like a few months ago, he added to debt portion of our model, like to being able to have like a pref on top of your standard debt source, which isn't that hard, and then at least in most people's view, but it does take a lot of back end work to make sure that everything is working. And then he also will add other features as they come along. And that's what's really important in this game, that things are going to change depending on the market, and how you need to underwrite and kind of the tools and options you have available are definitely going to change. So I want to talk about next is, now that we've kind of like fine-tuned everything, how do we kind of look at like what we call sensitivity analysis? What are we doing to try to like kill the deal? Because at the end of the day, that's what underwriting is you're trying to kill the deal.
Yeah. So after I've gone through and put in my, what I believe to be realistic assumptions, I have one feature in our underwriting spreadsheet that shows me what happens if it doesn't go as planned. So for one, if vacancy is higher, another variable that I have is that if the rent growth isn't what we think it will be. And the last is the exit cap. So I'll look at five different scenarios, plus or minus my base scenario for those three categories, and see what the investor IRR and average annual return is if each of those happen. So if I plug that in, and in the worst case scenario, we're still hitting our target returns, then it's a go. It's a good deal, at least at the price that we have in our assumptions to pursue further. But if, say, vacancy fluctuates a little higher than we want and we're not hitting our returns, then we need to maybe dive in a little deeper and see how confident we are with our numbers. And maybe our purchase price is just $500,000 lower or something like that. And then the deal works again for us.
Yeah. And that's really like looking at comps to see where the market vacancy is in that area, in that given area. And we usually underwrite at 6% anyways of vacancy across the board, even if it's a market that has like historically 96 to 98, we'll still do it.
That's 6%. Just physical too. Yeah. So we'll do even more than that. Economic.
We'll do economic. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's another important thing too, is just, yeah, of course, like we're going to do our best not to be at that level, but like a lot of stuff happens. I think it's important and prudent to underwrite somewhere around there, where what if it does happen? And then also, I think it's important to look at break even. Like what happens if vacancy goes up to 15%, like you're still going to be able to like pay your debt service?
Yeah. And that's, the debt coverage ratio is not only a useful number for lenders, it's also something that an operator needs to be aware of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good point. You shouldn't just be looking at it like, oh, am I going to be able to get a loan? No, it's like, am I going to be able to run this property if something drastic was to happen, or am I going to be in a bad situation?
Exactly.
I've alluded to this a lot in this conversation already, but how has your underwriting changed over the last 6 months? Because we all know the world's changed quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of all the things we talked about, is really being sure of our assumptions. Previously, maybe you could go a few weeks without getting a new insurance quote or getting a new debt quote. But now it's like you have to check in with your team every time you submit an LOI, certainly, and every week to make sure that your underwriting is still accurate, because it's changing so much.
Yeah.
And then I think it's really important for an underwriter like myself to do is just kind of read about the macroeconomics of the country, of the United States, but also the world, since it's the kind of a global economy now. By no means an economist, but it helps to have a general sense of what's going on in your both politics and economics. It just gives you a better sense of how strong your assumptions are, or maybe how cautious you should be long term.
Yeah, it goes back to the point of our educated guess, right? Like, yeah, the more data points you have to pull on, the better of an educated guess we can make. So at the end of the day, that's what it is. No one knows where rates are going to go, how high they're going to rise, when they're going to pull back. No one knows where cap rates are going to go. And it's just one of those things. You just got to make your best educated guess. Yeah. And I think it's also on the debt side of everything, you got to be a lot more creative now than you did 6 to 8 months ago. Like 6 to 8 months ago, you could get 80% loan to cost, not even loan to value, loan to cost, yep, at a sub 4% interest rate, 5 years IO, no questions asked pretty much. Like, yep, you could just continue underwriting it at that. And now it's different. Now you got a 60% LTV. You can bring in pref equity partner that can kind of bridge that difference.
Yeah, they're expensive.
Yeah, they're really expensive. And then rate caps, which are insanely overpriced right now, and they're not even a foolproof thing. So yeah, it's a different world right now. And from the equity side of things too, like obviously that's not what we're talking about with underwriting here, but heard from a lot of people that it's harder to raise capital right now. So
yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty. And if you're raising money from individual investors, you need to be sure about those relationships and check in with them often to see how they're feeling, trying to get a gauge of their interest in investing right now. Or a lot of people are just holding on to their gold bars for for a few months and see what happens.
Yeah, I think that's really what it is. Like I said earlier, that I think sellers are waiting for end of Q3, beginning of Q4 for the dust to settle. But I think investors are too, whether it's they want to know where the world's going or they think better opportunities are coming later after there's more pain. So yeah, it's just an interesting time for sure. All right, Tucker, I think we're probably going to go on for a little while, so I don't want to take up too much of your time. But one, is there anything you want to add before I ask final questions?
No, I guess I would say if you're an aspiring underwriter, I would say just trial by fire. Just look at as many deals as you can, because there's guidance that you can find out there for like how much per door to assume for, say, security or maintenance or something. But the best way that I've found to back up those assumptions is just to look at more and more deals. You'll see what the actual numbers are, and you'll be much.
And talk to property managers too.
Yep.
That's a big one, because they're in the market you're looking at. They know what they're currently getting charged for all that stuff. So that's a great resource for those types of rule of thumbs.
Yeah. Definitely.
So talking about resources, where could aspiring underwriter go to kind of learn more other than that? I know you've taken some different courses and certifications.
So I've done the Udemy course, but also getrefm.com is where I got my certification in real estate financial modeling. And that was amazing. I cannot recommend that course enough. It's about equivalent to a college course. So it takes a few months to get through and a lot of your time, but you'll come out being fully capable of creating your own underwriting template or manipulating others to your needs. And that's what really gives me confidence to build whatever we can dream up, whatever structure we need, I can make it appear.
Yeah, we've done some crazy things. We've had like Monte Carlo simulation, which I won't get into.
Yeah.
We currently have our sensitivity analysis. We have different levels of debt structure we can use. You know, whether it's just going to be, you know, a traditional one lender, bring in a second, refinance to pull out equity or not. And that's really handy when you have a partner that can just do that in an afternoon or less.
I guess one kind of caveat is that you don't always have to get that detailed.
True.
You can keep it simple. And if it's a deal, you can still do it without getting to the granularity that sometimes I get into. But it helps to be able to do that, especially when cap rates are so compressed and there's so many players in the industry now. There needs to be a way that you can differentiate yourselves. And I think that's one of our strengths, is that we can really get into the nitty gritty and fully understand every single digit and number that we're assuming and projecting as well.
I love it. All right, last two questions of the show that I ask every guest. And as always, I don't prepare the guests because I want to hear the raw answer. The first is, why real estate to build your, one, financial goals, but two, the life of your dreams? There's many investment vehicles out there, many different ways, but why real estate and specifically what we do, apartments?
I wish I could have some really thought out response here. But I mean, for me, I got into real estate and I enjoy real estate for a number of reasons. One being the passive aspect. Two of us are active, of course, but this generates a lot of income with little effort once a property is stabilized. And because I'm getting older, I'm expecting a son a couple weeks from now, having income in as passive of a possible is the best way that I think you can make income, and so that you can spend more time with your children and your family. But also advantages like being able to reduce your tax burden. No one likes taxes that I know, at least. So being able to offset any paper losses or depreciate kind of CapEx that you're doing on properties, that'll further increase your wealth because you're giving less to Uncle Sam. I think as an engineer, as a civil engineer, hard assets have always interested me as well. It's a real thing. It's not an NFT or some coin. It's a real thing that you can go see, and you can create strong communities. You can build communities, you know, reduce crime in areas by improving properties.
No, I think that's all great reasons. Yeah, one of the reasons I loved it was, I think what you're alluding to is, like you said, it's not necessarily passive because we do work, but it's the flexibility that comes along with it. Like, you can way more flexible life than your typical W-2. For sure. And then, yeah.
I mean, everyone's crazy about work from home, but how about just be home? You don't have to even work. Like, that seems like the ultimate goal.
Yeah, he's saying that, but we just had a meeting before this. We'll probably be underwriting later.
We're getting there.
All right, last question. Because this is not only a real estate podcast, but a personal finance, because we all know it's not what you make, but what you keep. The last question is, if you had a time machine, that question everyone asks, if you could go back to your younger self and give yourself one piece of financial advice to maybe set your life up a little differently, what would that be? What would you tell young Tucker?
Buy Amazon. No, buy more Tesla. I don't know. No, it would probably be invest earlier. My family did have some financial literacy, but like, I didn't really dive into it myself until I was in my probably mid-20s. But if I had known what I know now when I was 16 and working a full-time job in high school, I don't know that I could, but if I could have saved some money or invested back then when I was younger, I certainly would be appreciating that nowadays.
All right, awesome. Well, Tucker, love it. Thanks for jumping on. I'm sure we'll have Tucker on again, most likely again. And we've even flirted with the idea of sharing our model. So that could be something in the future. I'd probably be a small monetary cost just because a lot of hours that got into it. And two, I think just from a liability and contractual, if that's how you pronounce that word, regard, it makes sense to put a little money on it. But yeah, so if that's something anyone's interested in, just reach out to me, Instagram, LinkedIn, wherever you can find me, and let me know. Because if it is something that everyone's really interested in, then maybe we'll get it out there even faster.
Yeah. And if any of the listeners have unique scenarios or situations that they have trouble analyzing, if you are a real estate operator, then reach out as well. And I'm sure I can put it in a spreadsheet for you and show you what you're looking for.
Yeah. And that's a good point. Ask, where can they find you?
You can contact us on our website, greenbriercg.com, or my email directly, tucker@greenbriercg.com.
Perfect. All right, Tucker. Well, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll talk soon. And everybody, as I always say, easy doesn't pay well, and instant gratification is self-destructive. So always remember, it's not just working hard for your money, but having your money work hard for you so you can create the life of your dreams and make this world a better place. All right, everybody, I'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is an investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and, of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.